So my guest on this week's edition of the Retail Risk Podcast, sponsored by Sensormatic, is Steve Middleton, Head of Profit Protection at The Body Shop. Now, Steve's bio tells me that over 30 years ago, he started his career at Debenhams, a UK-based department store. And after 9 or 10 years, he then moved on to The Body Shop in a variety of roles, which I'm sure we'll touch on during the course of our conversation today. Moving across to profit protection, probably about 15 years ago, and recently Global Profit Protection Manager. And I know that has shifted from store-based to some of the e-com and online issues during the pandemic, which I'm sure we're all getting sick of talking about, but he is going to be on our radar for a little bit longer. So Steve, welcome. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Paul. Glad to be here.
So Steve, perhaps in the first instance, as I'm sure you know, we have an international audience, most of which I'm sure have heard of The Body Shop, but perhaps you could just give us an overview of what The Body Shop business looks like today.
Yeah, so Body Shop, we have got a mix of company markets and franchise. The franchise part of the business is where the business was able to grow so rapidly in from 1976 onwards. We're now trading in, from a company markets point of view, 18 different company markets, going from obviously US, Canada, across the UK, mainland Europe, and then across to Singapore, Hong Kong, Australia, and now Japan. So yeah, really interesting business. Probably got over 1,000 company stores. We trade in something like 11 different time zones. You know, it's a truly global brand, and I think that the reach from a franchise point of view is again huge for us. One of the biggest things there is about how we integrate with local farming communities, etc., for those key organic, you know, wonderful raw ingredients that the Body Shop uses. Mm.
And so just a quick question with a retail footprint of that scale, have you been able to reopen all or the vast majority of those stores post the lockdown? What's your footprint look like?
Yeah, very much so. It's very obviously varies market by market. So the UK very much just joined back into post-COVID. And release, but then there are obviously other parts, you know, within the UK that are not open yet. But you know, there has been probably around 50-60% of all the company market stores that have been able to open are being open throughout the pandemic, such as US and Canada. Australia was hit for a time, but then they bounced back quite massively. So for again, from that point of view, we've been averaging around 50-60% actually for the bricks and mortar stores all being open.
Cool. And so over the last 12 months, I know I'd picked up, historically, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you've maybe looked towards the physical stores, but I understand your focus has maybe shifted a little bit towards e-com and a direct selling channel that the Body Shop has got. What's that been like? Has that been learning a new skill set? Has it kept you up at night, sort of in the instruction manual? What's that been like?
Yeah, you know, it's that whole thing of grown up with being bricks and mortar, and you know, the large majority of the businesses is bricks and mortar, but the ever-growing knowing that e-com's over there and you've got to actually get hold of it, Steve, because it's growing fast, etc. But then with COVID, and obviously with stores and market lockdowns, the other channels that we actually do have, so we have e-com and then we also have the direct selling channel, which is actually Body Shop at Home, that is just ballooned. It's just been great. It's one of those that's been trickling along and it's been part of Anita's original outset of empowering, women, to be having that self-esteem and well-being, which is what we're all talking about these days, but she had the vision of having that a long, long time ago. That channel has just been great. And, from my understanding, it, as you say, it's back to the drawing board of, well, I don't know much about it. I need to know more about, what happens? What's the commission plan? You know, what happens when they place an order? How do they place an order? Et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, for me, it's just been, you know, yes, fascinating, understanding more. Then also now within that whole particular channel, it's thinking also about microsites and landing pages and things which I have not even touched before from a compliance point of view from there. So again, as you say, the learning curve has been very steep from that point of view. And, you know, thinking now of lots of other things like, you know, fraud rules, you know, how can we use fraud rules that we use for e-com? How can we use those within, you know, the body shop at home and things like that? So, you know, as you say, it's been a huge learning curve and one, you know, I had to actually look at recruiting other people actually into the business just to help with that particular channel and understanding. So, yeah, it's been a huge learning curve, definitely.
So you also have been trying to recruit people under the age of 25 that have just grown up with e-com to try and tell you what to do.
Well, precisely. Yeah. There is that, you know, we need to know about different marketplace websites and where people are actually selling things. And I'm going, I know about eBay. Yeah, I know about a couple of those are the ones that are on there. But, you know, then you actually say, well, can you actually look at Facebook and Facebook Marketplace and things like that? And I'm going, yeah, I might need to get someone helped on that one. So definitely from there, it is a learning curve to understand, you know, all the different ways and methods of communicating these things. There's no doubt about it. But yeah, definitely.
So we'll wait and see. Perhaps if your own Instagram account gets a lot of followers, maybe you could even be one of the Body Shop's paid influencers as well as working there. Now, look, you touched on fraud rules there as something that you've had to learn. But on your e-com and direct channels, can you give us a sort of a flavour of what risk you're facing? You know, where does your loss come from? You know, and are you using external providers for those fraud rules, or is it maybe an internal system that's been developed? What are the cogs that plug together within your world?
Yeah, so one of the things is actually we've moved to a card provider, Adyen, who are, you know, look from our point of view is over a number of, I'll say years from that point of view, opening up into different markets for us. But that obviously does have some great benefits actually within having that particular card provider of looking at their own particular fraud rules. So it's not an external particular point, it's their own particular in-house focus on that. And, you know, yeah, very much so that you have the set thing from an e-com point of view, you have a set thing from an e-com point of view by market, because obviously the American market is very different to the UK market from a fraud rule set and bot attacks and all those sorts of things. So, you know, we have different fraud rules for different markets. But then moving across into, you know, these particular challenges, I think from a COVID, because of the increase in e-com and increase in direct sales, you know, we've had that whole thing like everyone else has of goods lost in transit, that friendly fraud, you know, that's then gone through the roof. And then, of course, you're then thinking customer satisfaction, they're missing their products. For some of them, genuine. Some of them, obviously not, but obviously, how do you know that? So I think where we would have been lucky before COVID, that we hadn't had such a high impact of the friendly fraud, but because of the increase in transactions, that has obviously had a knock-on effect on the increase of, you know, disputed orders and everything else from that point of view. So from us, you know, we have been affected like everyone else on the increase of e-com orders being delivered to homes and, you know, those, if need be, not arriving at their final destination correctly. And then the follow-up with that, et cetera, the reordering, et cetera, et cetera. So that for us, like anyone else, you know, I'm sure, I think because of our price point not as being as high as, you know, the electrical or anything else, that we've probably hidden under the radar a little bit and not as targeted, if need be, by organised crime. But, you know, from our point of view now, it is, you know, higher up on our agenda insofar as understanding the extent of, you know, the friendly fraud, et cetera, and understanding what we need to try to do.
Yeah, it is interesting. You know, on this series, we've had some of those retailers that have got more expensive products, and I wonder whether that, you know, threat is going to cascade down more to people in your price point, because they're now installing cameras above every picking station. So if you're saying something wasn't in a delivery, they can send you the little edit, or at least have a discussion with you to say, no, this was packed. Then there's multiple touch points all the way through. They're weighing the product at multiple points to confirm it's the same as when it was packed, and then photographs on delivery. And I guess if organized crime gets, you know, and it was Ralph Lawson at the Hut Group was talking about theirs, and there's other retailers that have spoken about what they've done, then that organized crime is going to look, well, okay, who's not got that technology? And I guess then, you know, it's a rush to roll it out.
No, very much so. And I think, as you say, more and more so, the whole, you know, weight of the actual product and it being assessed literally before it gets, you know, onto the van from a distribution to the third party logistics, you know, having that knowledge that particular parcel is as described and weighed from that point of view is a great feeling that, you know, at least the genuine customers are getting exactly what they actually wanted. It's not being short picked or anything else. So, you know, that is first side, the customer service and experience side. But then after that, then yes, you know, knowing that, you know, you can't necessarily be defrauded from that point of view, that it is a genuine package being dispatched.
It's a fine line, isn't it, about judging when to make that investment, because if you make it too late, the losses can be catastrophic if you suddenly come onto the radar. But, you know, you've got to balance it when you roll that out. Now, look, I want to fast forward to 6-12 months from now and try and understand what your day-to-day is going to look like, maybe some areas that you've got to focus on, various parts of the business. Before we do, we're just going to take a 30-second break and have a quick word from our sponsors, and then we'll be back with Steve Middleton.
Now, more than ever, retailers and shopping centres need to create efficient and safe shopping destinations that can thrive in the most challenging of market conditions. Sensormatic Solutions uniquely combines insights into loss and liability, shopper insights and inventory visibility to help you power operational excellence and deliver frictionless, secure, personalised shopper experiences while driving revenue. Visit us at sensormatic.com to learn more.
So, welcome back. Steve, as I was saying there just before that short break, fast forward 6-12 months within the Body Shop business, maybe you personally, are there projects or areas of focus on the horizon that you'll be maybe reverting to, or that have now sort of come onto the to-do list?
Yeah, very much so. I think, first of all, more than anything else, the Body Shop is owned by Nature & Co. Nature & Co. are actually based in South America and launched actually on the US Stock Exchange last year. That provides obviously some benefits, but then also some more difficult, challenging things, such as SOX, Sarbanes-Oxley compliance, from an audit point of view. And we've just gone through our first full year with our new external auditor. And obviously, you know, it's a bit life-changing from a financial point of view on what you need to do to prove what you've done, to prove that the figures that you've communicating are correct. And I think that, for me, is quite a key learning and one of those things that I want to try and smooth that particular process out, try and make it as easy as possible for the control owners, but then also actually from an auditor's point of view to make my life a lot easier, because it was you know, some very long days, put it that way, and some long phone calls, but even back to Brazil, you know, back to here, etc., from a Natura point of view, as obviously the company, and then also with the actual external auditors, again, all around the world, not only from a statutory audit, but from a SOX audit. So that, for me, was quite a big eye-opener on what I want to try and look at. The other things are what, you know, the way the business is changing. And I think, you know, we're still very optimistic on the bounce back of bricks and mortar, but, you know, being very mindful of how the direct sale channel's actually growing, how, where, you know, what's the next step from an e-com point of view. And that for us, you know, is obviously where we're actually doing some particular focus on. And from my point of view of, you know, have we got all those, you know, controls in place before we even start? And I think that's the key point within, you know, I think all of my particular profit protection colleagues, is that, you know, you've got to get in there early. When someone's got that idea, is actually get in there and actually then talk about where it could go wrong. And I know that's, you know, one of those particular things that we have this brilliant skill of doing, of telling people when things may go wrong and how it will go wrong. But that in some ways I think is quite key on being prepared before you even launch. So you're not doing like you actually said, you know, you're reacting, but you are being proactive from that point of view. So, you know, I know we've spoken a number of different things, that even think about Corin and about his business enabler, you know, and how we want to be seen as a business enabler, you know, and I absolutely do. But it's true. You sometimes do have to then actually paint a black picture, a dark picture of what could go wrong, for people to actually understand and well, what is that risk? You know, how big is that risk? And what do we need to mitigate that risk? So you're absolutely right. I think getting in early is quite key. So, yeah, for me, there's a lot of things I can do to try and help my own, you know, work life work smoothly. And I think the other piece is being involved at those particular key decisions in the business and being part of that early enough, being part of that discussion process that you can actually influence.
Influence, but without being known as the no department, which
absolutely the Grim Reaper. Yeah. Anything else from that point of view? It reminds me of when I was going back into stores and you were doing audits and things, and you know, you were known as the Grim Reaper. You'd walk into the store and the store manager would literally be in tears, you know, and that's not tears of happiness. That's, oh my God, Steve's here, you know, he's come to do an audit. So yes, you're absolutely right. Not wanting to actually have that, the no department, the Grim Reaper, but just having some alternative views from that point of view.
Do you think perhaps that you all wore black trousers and black polo shirts was perhaps not helpful when you walked into the stores? I don't know.
That and a balaclava. Yeah, no, it wasn't. But yes.
Big black duffel bag, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, I'm always interested, you know, different loss prevention directors, risk directors, if you like, have their favourite piece of technology or process. If you were to be, you know, let's say the business acquired a new chain of stores or opened up a new line, what was the first bit? They said, okay, there you are, we need to get a handle on the losses within this business. Is there a piece of technology you go to? Is there a people process? What's the window on your laptop that spends the most time open, or that you've got your favorite analyst sticking their nose into?
Sure. I think there's two particular parts to it. I think first of all, you know, big belief actually in the whole people, you know, we're still, you know, it's still, there's a lot of processes, and I know we can go through that, but it's about that support and educating people. So, you know, if a portion of your estate is actually bricks and mortar, or your business is bricks and mortar, then, you know, you need to actually invest in the people, because they do things wrongly. You know, you accept a delivery at the back door wrongly. You know, you process a sale wrongly. You process a discount wrongly. You do a stock adjustment wrongly. It all hits down completely. And what I've been able to actually focus on is actually doing that supporting and education piece, and also global alignment piece, because what was actually happening in America may be indifferent to what was actually happening in the UK. But that global alignment, that focus on in training and investment, supporting and educating the store teams, and also their district managers, their market-based field teams. So when they're sending out a communication, it's not a communication which is, you know, one, incorrect, but it's specific, it's really simple to follow, because, you know, you make it simpler for stores, then they'll do it. You make it difficult, then they won't do it. So I think that part, first of all, is the big thing for me. I think the second part is right product, right place, right time. You know, getting that supply chain all the way through. You know, if you fill a store full of stock, will it know what it's got? No. Will it be able to maximize all its sales opportunities? No. So, you know, for me, it's actually making sure that right place, right time from the stock point of view. I think one of the things that, you know, I've really seen a real change on, you know, is just getting that ownership actually within stores. And part of that is that they own the stock file. They own how they actually count, how they actually, you know, count from a PI count point of view. So they then know the impact of, well, if I haven't got that stock, then it's not necessarily my fault. There's a supply chain issue. But if I can, then I want to maximize that. So whatever my stock file needs to be, I need to make sure that that is correct. So I think, you know, one of the things is currently looking and working with Zebra from a self-scan point of view, a solution called Smart Count. It's done everything that we wanted it to do from a point of view of accountability in stores, ownership within stores, but also it has some fabulous flexibility, you know, on being able to count a whole estate. And I'm saying, you know, even from a market point of view of US and Canada, you know, we can actually count within a week's period. You know, every single store being counted in a week, done. You know, and that flexibility, working with a promotional calendar, operational calendar, means it's your lowest sale time and everything else. Or, you know, we can understand from a deliveries point of view where the stores will be at from a projection. So it really does, you know, fit and mold into, is it right for stores? Is it simple? Does it give us ownership, accountability, and will it do what we want it to do, which is update the stock file? So for me, from that point of view, the Smart Count self-scan is really great.
Yeah, I think that analogy, you know, the inventory really is the base, isn't it, which you can build everything from, because, you know, there's arguably, quote unquote, free sales to be had if you've actually got the stock there. You don't know what you're missing. So, yeah, it's interesting you've rolled that out. So, budget's no barrier. The board ring you up, and hopefully you'll be having a conversation with them in Portuguese by now, because I'm sure those lessons have been going well. and in Portuguese, they'll say, Steve, we've found some money, budget's no barrier. What piece of technology would you like to roll out into your business, online, in store, across the? Is there anything on Steve Middleton's Christmas list that you'd like to see in the stores?
Interesting. If I had anything, and it is that global solution, and it is that, you know, simple way of working, is a recyclable RFID tag. So we are not damaging the planet with any precious metals and everything else. That, you know, it's small enough that it actually, you know, is able to fit on bottles. We don't have secondary packaging, you know. So one of the things is you don't have a product in a box with a leaflet and everything else. We don't have that, and that's what we're trying to move towards. We don't have the secondary packaging. So it literally will be the bottle. Where do you put an RFID tag? How do you actually do it so it doesn't distract from the overall look of the actual product? And also, does it do from a point of view on our ethics on the whole recycling and environmental point of view? So I think that would be my biggest, and obviously the everything to go with it, you know, every single store, you know, be it front store, back store, antennas, you know, everything in there. So it does all the counting for you. It's just there. It's constantly, you know, refreshing. And that would obviously have another impact actually on us, because obviously the 3-year EU ruling of sell by dates of cosmetic products, you have to actually sell it within 3 years from the date of manufacture. But again, that would also help us on that whole wastage from an expired stock on not selling anything. A win-win situation. And I'm sure, you know, if we can get the franchisees onto it as well as, and the whole supply chain, so it's all done, that would be my magic wand.
So if there's any RFID manufacturers out there that think they've got a solution, that want to offer Steve a free trial,
yeah, absolutely.
Then get in touch. There might be an open door there to push against. Look, final question for you. Around the world, you've already touched on the high street, but are you hopeful for the high street going forward? And what, if any, changes do you think high street retailers should and could be making to make them more attractive?
I do think the high street has a huge part to play. There's no doubt about it. And I think the whole touch and feel and understanding, but also having that customer interaction and having that, so call it specialist knowledge within the product. You know, this is quite, you know, from my point of view of Body Shop, you know, you come in, you want to actually understand, you know, your different skin types, what works, what doesn't, as well as just the beautiful smells and everything else. So, you know, I think they want that consultation. They want that one-to-one. I don't think you're going to get that actually from a, you know, an e-com point of view of actually someone face-to-face doing recommendations, etc. And obviously from our point of view, you know, we have done before COVID, you know, a lot more demonstrations, you know, so we're doing a lot more, you know, showing you the look and feel, etc. of the product. So I still think that human interaction is still absolutely required, and people will still want that, definitely, from that point of view. Did you remind me what the second part of the question
was? Yeah, I mean, you were touching on there is that interaction, but, you know, is there anything you think high street retailers should be doing to make themselves more appealing? I mean, you've said there the demonstrations, the human interaction, but for you, is it more video screens? Is it coffee shops? Is it pedestrianized areas? Is it, I don't know, is, you know, what's your personal champion?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think it is just that whole leisure feel of it all. You know, you do want to actually just make it, you know, not necessarily the day to day. And it's interesting because, you know, at the moment I'm not commuting at all, so I'm not doing my, you know, my particular coffee shop run, whatever, from that point of view. But for me now, I think it's very much you do need that balance of everyone being open, you know, and everyone having that, you know, so the customer has the choice, you know, so having that attraction of being able to actually go from one to another shops, you know, natural competition, I think, is actually good. But I think that leisure feel of it all, of, you know, drinks, food, as well as actually having the actual retailers, I think is essential, having that mix. So you do feel as though, you know, you are going out for the day, or you are having a bit of a treat, and just taking that time out. So very much so, I think it's that mix that we actually do.
Yeah, I think you're right. Having everything open when it's been, you know, some open, some not, it's been quite a bland experience. And there's nothing more depressing than closed shop front. So at least everybody that can be open, I think being open will be a start. And you're right, being able to stop off for food and drink along the way. And to your point about smells, I think retail has to remember all of the things that it can offer over an e-com site. And an e-com site is two-dimensional. You know what's in stock, and it can be convenient, you know, particularly in Amazon, you know, to get the product almost same day, or certainly next day in many cases. But, you know, that isn't necessarily what it's all about, is it? So I'm with you. I think the high street, you know, I think the high street needs to take a long look at itself. And I know some of the brands have gone, and it's terribly sad for the people affected, but these fascias and brands, and it's not just the stores, it's the restaurant brands and some of their offerings, they haven't changed for 20 years 25 years, and you kind of and some have, and they've evolved, and they're still with us and going from strength to strength. There's been new offering, but a lot of them were, yeah, a little bit tired and maybe missed their window for investment, and competitors have come along. So, but I'm pleased to see that the Body Shop is on the front foot. I'm pleased to see that it's even more international than it was in terms of its ownership and footprint. I'm pleased to hear that Anita Roddick's original vision for the business is still there in terms of ethical retailing, and the no secondary packaging is terrific. So, Steve, thank you very much for being my guest on this week's edition of the podcast. It's always an absolute pleasure. You and I are obviously based in the same country, being the UK. So therefore, I hope in the not too distant future, we might actually get some of that good old fashioned face to face, which is the basis for fabulous retail as well. So, Steve, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Paul. Thank you.